welcome to Lineberg Information Services podcast entitled Portability Malpractice Alert. I'm Bob Keebler, and joining me today will be Vince Lackner of the Lackner Group. Vince, thanks for joining us.
Bob, it's great to be here.
Vince, I'm hoping you can share with us some of the insight you have on Notice 2011-82, which was issued less than 24 hours ago. This notice, issued yesterday, September 29, 2011, addresses portability. What I'd like to cover with you is the malpractice issue, in that the way I understand the rules and the way everybody seems to be reading them is that you actually have to file a 706 to obtain portability. As crazy as this seems, they try to make the law simpler, but they've actually made it much more complicated.
Bob, that's correct. In fact, the IRS notice that went out with this notice points out that it may be that for most, if not all, estates of married people starting in 2011, that a 706 would have to be filed regardless of the size of the estate.
So what happens, Vince, if somebody doesn't file a 706? Let's just say that, for example, I just don't know any better. I'm a CPA. My client died. I'm thinking all they have to do is a quick probate with the lawyer, and $2 million passes from grandpa to grandma. Grandma's now worth $4 million, and there shouldn't be any problems.
That's correct. Now, in 2011 and 12, they'd be pretty well covered because the exclusion for each of them is $5 million. So if you don't file a 706 in the first estate, then the surviving spouse still has her $5 million to cover the $4 million of assets that she has. Now, there are two scenarios where that won't be enough. One is if she should hit the lottery, then she'll go from $4 million to $54 million or some big number, and that's where the extra $5 million from her deceased spouse could come in handy and, in fact, provide a tax savings of $1,750,000. That's $5 million times 35%. The other scenario is where in 2013, if they should change the exclusion, if they were to extend portability but to reduce the exclusion, maybe the exclusion is only $1 million in 2013 with portability. Then she has only her $1 million to cover the $4 million of assets she has and could benefit from $1 million from his estate at that point.
Vince, there's no tax due. 5 years later, if the spouse dies, can't they just file a late 706 and claim portability at that point in time?
Actually, you cannot, because the rules are very explicit that in order to preserve the exclusion from the first estate and to protect portability, you have to file a timely and complete and properly prepared 706 in the first estate. So unless you extend it to get 6 more months after the normal due date of the first 706, then you apparently have no remedy later to go back and get that exclusion for the second estate.
Now, Vince, let's look at some very practical timing. Certainly, some people listening to this podcast had clients die in early January. And if a person died on January 1st, 2011, their estate tax return is actually going to be due October 1st, 2011. But because October 1st is a Saturday, we moved to Monday the 3rd. The government really gave us about 4 or 5 days to react to this. Now, arguably, the instructions for the 706 came out a few weeks earlier, and then the news was out on how this was going to work. But I think this is a very unfair situation. Perhaps the government should have built in an automatic extension in some circumstances. But what do practitioners need to be concerned with? Is this what I'm hearing, Vince, is that the government is estimating that far more 706s will be filed this year than in the prior 5 or 6 years?
That's absolutely correct. At the time when the exclusion was $1 million, I believe that the number of 706s filed annually were somewhere in the range of 100,000. At the point of the exclusion at $5 million, I believe that number dropped down to something like 5 or 6,000. When you consider that every year in the United States, there are approximately 950,000 people who are married at death. You have the potential of actually having to file a 706 in every case of the 950,000 to protect portability. Granted, the likelihood of the second spouse needing it based upon lottery winnings is very slim, but if you happen to get one of those cases, then you have no remedy if you didn't protect the exclusion in the first estate.
Now, lawyers and CPAs trying to protect themselves, do you think the standard of care is going to be that if I refuse to sign a 706, my lawyer or CPA is going to make me sign off on that and give me basically a short memo that lays out all the hazards of not doing this?
Well, I think any practitioner at the very least should get a letter for the file from the representative of the first estate to state that they intentionally do not wish to file a 706 despite the potential benefits of doing so in the second estate.
No, and I think that's going to be very wise. The lawyers I know are very concerned about this, as are the CPAs. Vince, do we have to have an executor appointed? What if I leave my joint property, a condominium in Miami Beach worth $1 million to my wife, and I leave my wife my $2 million IRA, and we have no other property that passes through a trust or through probate? Can my wife just file the 706, or who has to do that?
Yes, apparently she could without getting appointed. In the instructions for the 706 for 2011, on page 2, upper right corner, they define the term executor as meaning executor, personal representative, or administrator of the decedent's estate. Then they go on to say that if none of these is appointed, then every person in actual or constructive possession of any property of the decedent is considered an executor and must file a return. In this case, it's not really must file a return, it's may file a return, because this, is optional if the estate's too small for the $5 million threshold. But yes, apparently you could do it without being appointed. A little twist is that if you are appointed, then the 706 now requires that the executor provide documentation of their status, namely a court document or a certified copy of the will or some other official document that proves their status. I might add one more point, and that is that if an estate proceeds to file an application for extension of the 706 using form 4768, then that form can be signed by an attorney, for example, or a CPA or another authorized representative, and does not require the signature of the executor or other personal representative. So that, of course, gets you 6 more months to think about these things as things shake out so that you can make appropriate decisions on a fully informed basis with more time.
Vince, I think I'm following most of your message, and I know there are many things you wanted to discuss. Vince, in the minute we have left, tell me the most burning issue that practitioners need to be concerned with.
Well, Bob, I would say in addition to the need to either file a 706 or an application for extension by Monday for the early estates, they need to review Notice 2011-82. In that notice, the background states that the executor of the first estate has to file a 706 where the executor computes the exclusion amount and makes a portability election. The reason that's in the background of the notice is that the statute specifically states that. The notice continues in its guidance to then say that by filing a 706, you are deemed to have made the computation, and you are deemed to have made the portability election. So you can ignore the background piece and rely upon the guidance piece in filing a 706 as all you have to do to preserve portability from the first estate to the second estate.
Vince, thanks for being here today. Your insight on the issue of portability has been very helpful. On behalf of Lineberger Information Services, this is Bob Keebler, and joining me today was Vince Lackner, President of the Lackner Group.